Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back Show, where intimacy is real. On this show, we believe that intimately connecting with yourself, your significant other, children, family, friends, business networks, community, and your higher power can elevate your life to work towards a positive future. Thus, we explore intimate topics, inspiring life stories, spiritually and insightful tips on strengthening relationships. This show is hosted by Dr. April, a Florida-licensed mental health counselor, relationship and intimacy therapist, board-certified telemental health counselor, national certified counselor, and a certified sex therapist. She is the owner of Vacation Counseling and Cape Coral Therapists, and the creator of the Intimate Connections newsletter. For more information about Dr. April's services and the Bringing Intimacy Back show, please visit bringingintimacyback.com. Check out past shows on Apple iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Now, let's get this episode of the Bringing Intimacy Back show started, because we share with you the secret power to intimacy to create a life you love, or love the life you create. Now, here's your host, Dr. April.
Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back show, where intimacy is real. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. Well, as you know, we're in political upheaval right now, where people are talking about politics all over the place. And so what I wanted to do today, because and for some of us, it is tearing up our friendships, our families, and all that kind of stuff. So what I wanted to do today is have a person who's an expert on this. Today's topic is how to love someone who disagrees with your political view. And so when I did my research, and I was amazed by what I found, and I found this wonderful psychologist, Dr. Jean Schaefer, and I want to introduce you. Welcome, Dr. Schaefer.
Delighted to be with you, April. It's Jeannie.
Yes, yes. And so Dr. Schaefer is an expert on this topic. Let me give you a little bit about her background. She has interviewed many couples throughout, including husbands and wives, parents and children, friends, straight and gay, politics, and she's helped them overcome this, you know, when you're with your partner and you're talking and it goes into politics and it just goes into an upheaval and you guys disagree. She is able to work with you and help you throughout that. She's a psychotherapist who's been in private practice for over 45 years and the author of 7 acclaimed books on a variety of things, from books from dealing with siblings who are difficult or have dysfunctional brothers and sisters, or mothers who've chosen not to have children. She's written about these books here. In June of 2019, Dr. Schaefer released her newest book, which is the book that we're on this topic today talking about. It's called I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics. And it was published, and it appeared on MSNBC, Morning Joe, Fox News, Kennedy, CSPN, and CNN in support of the book. She did a lot of research, and it came from over 50 interviews from every type of politically mixed couple, from friends and relatives to lovers, as well as her own experience, as she is a diehard liberal who's happily married for many years to a stalwart conservative. I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics examines the political disagreements that are raging our personal relationships like never before. Welcome, Dr. Schaefer. How are you doing?
Delighted to be with you. And I have exactly 40 years of marriage this Saturday to a conservative. Now, I have to tell you, April, that he is not a Trump supporter. So this has made my life much easier than it would have been otherwise. But we, you know, it took us a long, long time to figure out how to deal with our political differences. And one of the reasons, and this book comes directly from my own experience, because it's not easy to do. But when you do it, you add so much love to your life and so much wisdom to your relationship. Because my feeling, people, is that politics is a hellacious term. But the difficulties of getting along with another person, even if you have exactly the same politics, there are always going to be enormous differences between you. So if you learn to do it in politics, you have learned to do it.
Right.
So this is, even if you both are going to vote for the first person, the same person, this is really helpful to know how to deal with disagreements, because we don't know how to do that. You know, now when people are dating, they only date somebody that votes for the same candidate. It's like religion used to be.
Yeah, I know. And you said, jumping directly into this topic here, you said that, or in your book, which I read, it's gone from 9% of intermarriage to 20%. Oh, it was 20%.
No, the other way around.
Yeah,
20%. I wish it went that way. When my husband and I got married in 1980, I was a child then. actually, he's 8 years younger than I am. But when we got married in 1980, 20% of people were married across political lines. My parents, my mother was a Democrat, my father was a Republican. That's very typical. Okay. Now, when I wrote the book, it went down to 9%. God knows what it is now. It's probably 2% now. Because now, if you don't even meet anybody who has the other politics, because they're the antichrist. You know, they're like, how could I have anything in common with this person who votes for Trump or who's, you know, against choice or for choice or whatever? And if there's such a terrible separation in our hearts that we don't imagine that someone from the other side can love us, mm-hmm. can be good to us, can be a good friend, or that somebody who agrees with us can be a pretty big louse. We also forget that.
Right. And I think it's even more now in the sense of us being very isolated.
Yes.
Yes.
On one
yes.
side or the other.
Right. So in this isolation with COVID and all that, first, I really do want to know how you're doing. I really
thank you. Know.
Yes.
Well, I have to say that COVID for everybody really tests intimacy, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
My husband and I live in New York City. He's a political journalist and a historian. Okay. And okay. I'm a psychoanalyst and writer. And we actually moved up to our house in the country 2 hours away because of what was going on in New York City. So the only people that we're around are each other.
Oh, okay.
We're out in the woods. And let me tell you, that is really what tests a relationship.
Right.
Plus the fact that I have to cook 3 meals a day now, in addition to writing a book.
Yes.
On how people deal with maintaining their identities through cancer. A nice light topic. So It really is a very difficult thing. We're both well, happily, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful to be able to be in another place. But right now we're in New York City because we keep coming back because this is our home.
Okay.
Now, New York is now not a bad place to be.
Right.
Less than 1% now.
Yes, Florida is where we're back now.
Goodness. But it has been a real challenge, I think, for everyone. Really.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. And then now, in the sense of even with, we're all stuck at home or we're stuck in these little bubbles.
Yes.
And we're, how can I put it? Back in the day, you used to get your news. I mean, these were years ago, like once a day. And now our news is constant, right?
24/7. Yes.
24/7. Yeah. So even if you didn't want to think about politics.
Much too much.
It pops up on your phone.
That's right.
Yes.
And, you know, I thought it was really interesting that Biden gave his acceptance speech virtually. There was no audience. You know, it was amazing. And this is a very, I think this stresses people incredibly. And since politics is already stressful, you know, in families, we are really under enormous, enormous pressure. And this is when you need to really think about what you're doing and what you're saying and what you shouldn't say. Because we have this idea that if we're in an intimate relationship with a friend or a lover or whoever, we should be able to say anything. I disagree big time.
Oh, I do. I say all the time, your partner should be your number one client.
Everything to everybody.
Yes.
I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, there's lots of things I don't say. And not about politics. And we have a fantasy that this other person, if we share politics, we share everything. We don't. People nobody is exactly like you in what they know and what they believe and what they want. And first of all, if it's a man and a woman, you have differences right there, right? So right. I think it's so important to really learn how to have a conversation where you disagree. And if you can do it in politics, April, you can do it with anything. Mm-hmm. Because politics makes us crazy.
Exactly.
And it took us a long time to figure it out. It really did. And I have to say, I was worse than my husband.
Okay.
And you guys have been married, what,
45 years you were there, been a therapist?
I've been a psychoanalyst for 45 years.
But okay.
I've been married for 40.
Okay.
As of this Saturday, it's our 40th anniversary. But in the first few years, I had an idea. See if you had this idea yourself.
Yes.
That I could change my husband's mind because I change people's minds for a living, right? They come to me, they pay me to think differently. First of all, this is not so hard. I do it every day. Well, of course, the only problem is my husband didn't want his mind changed.
Of course not. Right.
He had his own ideas. And since he's senior editor of National Review, which is the major conservative political magazine in the United States, most of those people, thank God, are not Trump supporters.
Okay.
But some of them are. Some of them I know for many years now are. And
right.
I have a secret to tell you. Some of them are really nice people that you like.
Even though
they like Trump.
Right.
You have to kind of wrap your mind around that. But anyway, in the first years of our marriage, I really thought I could convince him by my persuasive ideas that he should change his mind. And I was very frustrated. It's embarrassing to say, but it's true. You know, I was very frustrated that he didn't change his mind. In fact, mm-hmm. he was annoyed with me for expecting him to. So this was naive on my part. And I think arrogant on my part. I mean, not conscious.
Right.
Particularly, the big issue that I have, my hot button issue, is choice for women.
Okay. And is that what made you decide to write the book?
No. What decided me to write the book is, first of all, that I've lived through this with my husband for many, many years. And people were starting to call me and write to me because he and I have written about this together.
Right.
You know, for many years in different places. And people started to call me and said, help, you know, I'm about to get a divorce because my husband and I can't have a conversation at breakfast. And so I started to see a lot of people. Let me tell you the funniest, not only funny, but it is a funny example. This couple came to see me. They came into town from a different city. And mm-hmm. they were in their, I would say, late 60s, very sophisticated people. He was in the mental health field. They were both in the mental health field, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. And the problem was that he loved Trump. Mm-hmm. And they had this big house, 3-4 house. You may remember this from the book. She wouldn't let him listen to Fox News in the basement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all the way down in the basement.
It polluted the airways.
Wow.
It polluted the air in her house. And I said, well, wait a minute, it's his house too.
Right.
You know, and what is he forcing you to sit there with him? No.
Right.
And I said, you can't do this. You cannot do this. And they had an excellent marriage in many ways. They'd been through a lot of difficulties. They were smart. They had a lot in common. But she felt he was originally a liberal and changed to be a conservative.
Okay.
She felt that he had betrayed her.
Mm.
That is, he didn't betray her. He came into his own in a different way than she did.
Right.
And so I gave them some instructions, particularly her, because he was pretty open. She was difficult. And although she was the one who agreed with me, I said, never try to force him to read an article at the breakfast table. I call this article thrusting. And
okay.
She said, oh, I do that every day. And I said, today was the last day or else you're going to get a divorce. And I never thought when they left, they were there for a couple hours. I never thought that they were going to work it out. But guess what? I wrote to him later, and he said it was much better.
Wow. Awesome.
I don't know if it was anything I did, but I have to say, it gave me hope.
Right, right, right. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this for a variety, because I've had couples and even family members that I've seen here, not my family member, but other family members who have come into counseling because solely of this, where there's so disagreement about politics, it's destroyed a father and son relationship and stuff.
Terrible.
Yeah, and then personally on my own, my hubby is, my husband, he's from Belgium. So he has a European, you know, that's what a European flavor. Yeah, sure. So he looks at it totally different. And so we're on a different, we both look at politics different. So he supports one party, I support another party, but we don't let it break us up because I understand how he came to that. But
well,
I think
that's unusual. Some people want their husband or wife to change their mind because they're wrong.
Right.
And look, I thought Rick was wrong. I thought he was wrong about a woman's right to choose whether she continues a pregnancy or not. But right. The fact is that he had his reasons for thinking this. And essentially, it was none of my business.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, now what we do, we both send checks to where we want, donations. We talk to our friends or our colleagues about the things we disagree. And we know that there are certain topics that are off limits, just off limits.
Okay. What do you honestly think compared to any other election period that this has become so polarized and so emotional? And a part of it, I do believe it's because it's all on our phones and everything. And, you know, it's everywhere.
Oh, sure, it's social media. Social media is terrible for this. I think it's one of the worst things. One of the things I counsel people is do not, if you have somebody in your family or your friend or your husband or wife who's on social media all the time and they disagree with you, don't look at what they write.
Okay.
You don't have to see it. You know what it is. Why stick it in your own face or their face and have a fight about what you know already? Don't do it. But, you know, Rick and I disagree about whether this is the worst things have ever been. He says that the late 60s were much worse because people were being killed and there were riots. And, you know, of course, we're getting there a little bit now, but I haven't felt so intensely about it before myself. But, you know, now I'm older. I mean, now I see I worry about the future. I worry, you know, when you're a teenager or a college kid, it's a very different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is a very dangerous time. I think that politics, as I said before, has replaced religion as our identity, one of the fundamentals of our identity. And that's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because it means if somebody has different politics than you, you know, they're from Mars and you're from Venus, and forget it. People don't talk to other people. This one guy that I interviewed, he was this lovely, sweet man, and he'd been going out with this woman. They had virtually everything in common. They'd both been in the military, they'd been in Europe, they're very sophisticated, nice people. He was a Trump supporter.
Okay.
And she left him because of that.
Wow.
He really loved her. And there was a lot lovable about her. And he said, look, we don't have to talk politics. You know, I'm even open to your ideas. She said, as long as you support Trump, you're the enemy. End of relationship. And she was in her 50s. She wasn't a child. And she had a lot of relationships that didn't work. And I said, well, look, this guy is a real possibility for you. He really has a lot in common with you. He appreciates you. Can't you put this aside? And the answer was no.
Right. I probably because maybe it became part of her value system, I guess, in some aspect.
It must have been. But, you know, our value systems, see, I have a different notion of value systems. I don't think who we vote for is necessarily the most fundamental aspect of our value system.
Right, right. I agree with you on that.
Well,
yes.
But, you know, a lot of people don't agree with that. But because politics is our value system. I mean, look. There are a million things that Trump does that I can't stand. Everything, pretty much. But my husband and I developed a test. We call it the chemotherapy test.
Okay. And what is that?
The chemotherapy test. And we both have reason to know about this from both sides.
Okay.
That is, when you're lying in a hospital bed getting chemotherapy and someone is standing by your bed helping you get through it, you do not ask their political affiliation.
Right.
I think that's the fundamental thing. And we both had had cancer over the years. And we both had people from the other side, including each other, stand by our side. Mm-hmm. That's what counts for me, the chemotherapy test. Now, it doesn't have to be, you know, you're desperately ill. But when somebody comes through for you,
right, they have your back.
They vote for.
Right.
But people do. I mean, they don't see this. And I feel, you know, one of the reasons I wrote this book is I wanted to show that I'm very grateful that I know people on the right. Not that I agree with their politics at all. And I hope they all, you know, don't vote.
Right.
But in terms of being human beings, no.
Yeah, we have to definitely look out for one another and be there yes. for each other. And it's not about the, you know, the politics and just, we have to be each other's brothers. Or
yes.
Definitely. Right. We're going to take a short break, Dr. Schaefer, and then when we come back, we're going to talk more about different techniques and different suggestions that you give in your book, I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics.
During this difficult time that we are all facing, many people are in need of someone to talk to. One option is speaking to a therapist to express your anxieties if you are feeling isolated or just need someone that will listen and help you with coping skills to get through. Dr. April Brown is now accepting new clients and is working with her existing clients through distance video counseling. The services are through a secure online HIPAA web-based practice management platform called Simple Practice. This technology can provide a secure two-way interactive video counseling session over the internet. For more information about video counseling, please email Dr. April Brown at info@draprilbrown.com or you may call 239-565-6921. Thank you. And remember, we are all in this together.
Hi, welcome back to the Bringing Intimacy Back show. I'm on the show today and I'm talking with Dr. Schaefer, and she has a great book, Because I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics. Here's a picture of it, and this is actually the English version of the book, but definitely check it out. I know it's on Amazon. And so let me ask Dr. Schaefer, in your book, one of the things you put down here, it's political persuasion is our national bad love affair. What exactly does that mean?
Because we have a fantasy that we can change another person's mind. And if you think about all the bad love affairs that you've had, one of the main things that most people want to do is change the other person's mind, either to make that person love you or to agree with you. And so I feel that politics has become like that now, that we can't, that the notion that we can disagree and love each other is inconceivable. But the fact is, there are no two people who agree on everything. It doesn't exist. That, you know, even if you have the same politics, you're going to see life differently because you have different childhoods, you have different personalities. It's a fantasy, and it's a pernicious fantasy. It's a dangerous fantasy that we all have to agree.
Okay, and I'm curious, because you just said we would go into relationships, think we can change each other people's mind, and you've worked with thousands of couples. So in the different generations, you know, does it matter in the sense of this whole political division? Is it harder, like for a millennial couple who's very young and maybe have that notion that I can change another person versus maybe a Generation X, even though they've lived longer and they understand politics a little bit more? I mean, or maybe they understand politics a little bit more. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're right. I think younger people really have a sense that not only can they, but they must change somebody else. And they think that the other person really ought to be changeable. And if that person isn't, there's something wrong with them. I interviewed two young women. They had been college friends and they were in their early 20s. And one of them had worked on Capitol Hill. She'd been a law student. And she just got sick of politics. She didn't want to vote. She just had had it. And the other one was a passionate Hillary supporter. and she couldn't stand that her good friend didn't agree with her. So she sent her a PowerPoint presentation that, to change her mind, which didn't change her mind, but it almost ruined their friendship. She was so offended, this other woman, like, what are you doing? Why are you sending me this? Why are you lecturing me? You know, but they were both kids, you know, and the woman thought, well, you have to think like this. Only a good person would think like this. You can't not be political. You're letting down the side. And this other woman said, you know, the hell with you. And they almost ruined a very good friendship over this. Okay. So I think younger people really have more of a fantasy. Another example, this couple that I was talking to, her friends were outraged that she was going out with a Trump supporter. And they said, we'll kill him. If you bring him here, we'll just kill him. I mean, that's a joke, but it's not a joke. Right. You know, as though nobody on the other side deserves to live. You know, I mean, look, I hate a lot of the things that are going on the other side, but I also know a lot of people who are on the other side. Now, not the people who like to put children in cages and, you know, a lot of this stuff, but there are people who believe in Trump who are not horrible people.
Right, exactly.
You know, and you have to be able to see that another person sees the world differently than you. You don't have to agree with them, but you have to see this. Because otherwise you're a child. And I don't know, you know, about your listeners, but I don't want to be a child my whole life in that way. I want to be able to appreciate other people for their real qualities and not just about who they vote for. Because I happen to know there are a lot of people who have exactly the same politics as me that I wouldn't trust with anything.
Right.
Except voting. I mean, I think they vote right, but I don't think they do anything else right. And this is the concept that we've lost it. You know, that voting, that which party you're in determines your whole personality, your value as a person. Where did we get this idea? Now, I'm giving you a minority opinion here. Because most people feel that who you vote for is who you are. And what's happening is families are really being ripped apart. You know, I think it was last year, the number of people who truncated their Thanksgiving dinners by an hour, who spent an hour less in the company of their families where people disagreed, was high. People don't get invited to Christmas because they have different politics. You know, people feel like they have to talk about politics and nothing else at the dinner table or the breakfast table. It's like our obsession.
Yeah, so, and you just made an interesting thing. People believe that who we vote for defines us. That's,
yeah. And I want to ask our listeners, you know, do you not know anybody who votes the same way you do, who you wouldn't invite to dinner or you wouldn't trust with important things? Because if you don't, I don't know who you are. Right. I don't agree with everybody who votes like I do.
So in the sense of, you know, we talked just ago, we talked about relationships in the sense of, you know, partners and intimate relationships, but also this also impacts families.
Absolutely.
Who have grown up kind of together, you know, maybe the, you know, some of the children are one way versus the other way, or the father's different than the daughter. Do you think that same concept of who we vote for is who we are?
Well, I think that a lot of people, I interviewed parents and children, siblings, all kinds of situations like that. Those are some of the most vicious fights because many, many of the children, those were adult children, felt that their parents who had a different political view didn't appreciate them, didn't let them speak. You know, if they voted for Trump and the father voted for somebody else, that they were an outcast.
Right, I've heard where they've even not let them see the grandchildren.
Yes, oh yes. And one woman that I spoke to, this was really, it was troubling to me. She, her own mother, who agreed with her politically, was just not a very helpful person and not very related. Her mother-in-law was wonderful, took care of the grandchildren for nothing, loved them, they loved her, But the grandmother was a Trump supporter, and she herself was a very left-wing Democrat. And she spent a lot of her time trying to convert her mother-in-law. And she almost ruined the relationship. And I said, why do you have to convert this woman? She's you love her. She loves your children. She's great. Why can't you let her be who she is? Well, because, you know, morally, she's wrong. I said, well, I don't know. I think it's morally wrong not to appreciate somebody's good qualities.
Right.
But this is a very typical kind of thing. Husbands and wife. I had one couple, the woman was a Trump supporter and the man was very left-wing. And he said, well, my mother and father disagreed and my mother left my father. So if we don't disagree politically, she's going to leave me.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, this is how people are thinking.
Right.
It's really a very, very sad thing to me because we're losing so many opportunities to expand our horizons.
Right, right. And like you said, we've got to learn how to understand each one another.
Well, I'm interested in understanding the other person is the Antichrist or the enemy, you know, and there we sit. And look, it's true of some people. I mean, the people who were, who were rioting and things like that, these aren't people you're going to talk to.
Right.
But that's not everybody on either side.
Right, exactly. Those are the extremes. Also, in your book, you mentioned political infidelity.
Yes. Well, this is this couple I just mentioned to you who have been married for years, where it was, I think she would have had an easier time if he had a love affair than if he became a conservative. You know, because people feel that if the person doesn't agree with them, it's like being unfaithful. But the fact is, that if somebody disagrees with you, it's not usually about you. It's about them. No, it's not an act. A person doesn't owe you political fidelity the way they owe you sexual fidelity or other, you know, till death do us part, you know, this kind of thing. People don't owe each other to agree politically. Where do we get this idea? Now, I'm taking a very strong stand on this because I think it's really a danger to society. I think it's ripping society apart the way we think about politics.
Mm-hmm.
Politics is not religion. It's not morality. It really isn't. There are people who are immoral who have particular politics on both sides, maybe more on the other side, I might say, but that isn't, you can't just judge a person. If somebody voted for Trump, so they're a monster. You can't do that. And somebody who voted for Hillary or Biden or whatever is a wonderful person. You can't do that either. If you do, you're not seeing reality. Because relationships are nuanced. Personalities are nuanced. You know, we don't love every quality that another person has, including ourselves. You know, but somehow politics is exempt from all of this. You know, politics, if you're not with me, you're against me. And I just find that, among other things, I find it boring. I like to learn about what other people think. You know, and I'm very proud to say that among my patients, I've had a number of people who were Trump supporters.
Okay.
And a number of people who were to the left of me. And, you know, I want them to feel safe and comfortable talking about what they believe. They know where my beliefs are. You know, a psychoanalyst used to never be able to say anything personal.
Right.
A religious thing. But everybody knows now anyway. Besides, since I wrote a book about this, everybody knows.
Yeah. And we have to be authentic anyway, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm wondering, because you keep saying about this, how politics has become kind of how we define ourselves and that maybe we should only stick with the people in our group. Where did that beliefs, that message get sent to us as Americans?
Where did we get that way?
Yes.
Oh my God. I think it's been going that way more and more as time goes on.
Okay.
Probably since the Reagan administration, at least, people started being very, very one-sided of the other. I know people who wept at Reagan's inauguration and things like this. And I think that may have been when it started to get really bad.
Right, right. And if
God, it's gotten horrible now, hasn't it?
Yes, yes. And since you mentioned the Reagan era, and I was actually in high school at the time, but I remember, and even as I think about this now, how a lot of the churches would go for one political view, and that's what they would talk about. And and I'm actually Catholic, but yeah, they talk about one political view, and you get ingrained in that. And and maybe that was one of the ways of how this all got started. In some
and that
aspect.
They encourage people to vote a particular way.
Right.
You know.
Right, that, right.
You know, if you're Catholic, you have to vote for the pro-life candidate. Or else you're not a good Catholic.
Right, exactly.
You can't think for yourself.
I mean, this
was across the board. But it really, I think there's been a real change for the worse with Trump. Partially because he's so out there. And people got crazy for him. I mean, he was God, you know, he was the next Jesus. I mean, I can't relate to that, honestly.
Right, right.
But a lot of people felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
No. I interviewed a very interesting couple. It was two young gay men, and they were both Trump supporters. One of them liked some of Trump's ideas, but couldn't stand his character. And the other one thought he was the greatest thing in the world. That he
this couple's always
wanted, you know. And they had fights about this because one of them said he's a jerk, but I like his politics. The other said he's wonderful. We don't really understand. He's playing three-dimensional chess. This is the big, you know. A lot of people say that, like we don't really understand how much he understands. Well, I think I understand exactly how much he understands, which is a great big zero. But so people. They have projections onto, just like we have projections onto other people, we have projections onto political candidates and political parties, you know. And I had actually an interesting experience with Biden's acceptance speech. I'm not a political animal particularly, and I have certain things that I believe in, but I vote. I have to vote because I have to cancel my husband's vote. But but I decided I wanted to hear his speech, Biden's acceptance. Rick, could you get that, please? We have a telephone ringing as we're doing this. Excuse me. Hello? Okay. Anyway, so I was listening to this speech, and I found myself doing something that I never expected.
What?
I started to cry. I was so moved by what he said. I never expected that. I didn't love this guy, and I also don't love him, you know. But I thought, he's talking about humanity. He's talking about things that matter to me. We haven't heard this. This is essential to say, I will protect everyone, even people who didn't vote for me, you know, that this epidemic is a disaster. And we haven't heard that. And I was kind of shocked how much it meant to me to hear someone who's an imperfect person like all of us say this, I will protect all Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I didn't expect my reaction, that this had gotten to me so strongly that I didn't, you know, that I was feeling so frightened by how things were not being taken care of.
Right, right. And I think from what we talked about earlier, with all the social media, with all the news and everything that's going on, when we watch this, and even if not even watching it constantly, it gets into us where it's made us fearful. It's made us scared.
Well, absolutely. If you don't feel anybody's in charge, it's like being a child and having a parent who has no control.
Right.
It's the same
right.
thing. Because we do look up to a president, you know, or to Congress. And if somebody says, this is going to go away tomorrow, you know, when it turns out he was lying, that he didn't think it would, you know, this is terrible. And it makes people feel endangered.
Right, right. We'll be in this for a while. It's going to.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it's going to definitely a while, yes. But we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, Dr. Schaefer will explain to us some tips on how to move past this and how to talk with our partners, loved ones, and spouses about politics, or even how to agree to disagree. So in this commercial, Dr. Schaefer, I would love you to tell us more about what you do, what services you provide, how people can reach out to you, find your books, and all that information there.
Okay. Would you like me to tell you now?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Well, as I said, I've been in practice for 45 years, and I'm the author of 7 books currently, all of which are on Amazon. You can look at my website, which is Jeannie Schaefer, SAFERPhD.com. It's got all of my TV appearances, all my radio, all my articles, anything you want to know about the topics that are dear to my heart. And they're what I consider taboo topics. They're things that people think about, but don't talk about with others. These are things we keep in our hearts. For instance, women who choose not to be mothers, people who do better in life after their parents die. That was a controversial book I wrote. I wrote a book on obsessive love. And I have a psychoanalytically oriented practice for many, many years. And I also work with couples. And of course, politics is one of my specialties because I have so much personal experience with it. And as I said, I'm now writing a book it's called Terror and Joy, Preserving Identity Through Cancer. And I'm hoping that will be published next year. It's quite a book to write. I've met people that make me feel good about the human race, because one of the things all of them seem to think about is, how can I use my experience to help others? When was the last time you heard that? I heard it 5 times a day. It was so wonderful to hear. And so I feel that therapy can really change people's lives. I'm sure you agree with me on this, that talking to somebody who is both sympathetic and expert can really show you what you're missing. And I have a particular specialty, which is kind of unusual these days. I also specialize in dream interpretation, which I taught for 30 years at graduate school and in psychoanalytic institutes. And I feel that people leave out dreams that are such a great source of information about ourselves. And when you learn how to understand your dreams, Freud called it the royal road to the unconscious. You have information about yourself that's amazing. And I have, in all of my books, I do mention my own dreams and interpret them. So those are the things that are precious to me. And I feel very grateful that I have patients who are from both sides of the political spectrum. And several of my patients have become therapists themselves, which I feel is a real honor.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for letting us know all about what you do and stuff. Yeah. So on this part right here, I would love to talk about different tips.
Oh, yes.
To get couples out there. I know one of the main tips you say is not to drink and talk politics. Even though I've heard from many people who love to drink, that drinking gives you liquid courage.
Well, it gives you dumb courage because, look, I think it's fine. If you want to drink and talk about any other subject, go right ahead. But if you want to have a sane conversation with somebody who disagrees with you, oh my God, don't drink. One of the reasons not to drink is that when you drink, you raise your voice. And people interpret that as shouting. Did you ever have a coherent discussion, a regular discussion with somebody who's screaming? Not possible. Not possible. So don't raise your voice and don't drink because it'll make you raise your voice. So that's the first. Another thing that's very important. Do not solicit manuscript. Don't send your person sitting across from you at breakfast an article to read that they disagree with. Don't stick it in their face. Right. You're not ever going to influence anybody that way. Don't tell them to read Facebook stuff that's not on their side. Forget this. Don't do this. Never start a political discussion by saying, how can you possibly believe that? Like that.
Right.
These are not discussions. These are fights. If you want to have a discussion with someone, you start with asking them what they think and why they think it in a decent way. And this is something that I learned from my husband. I would say to him, tell me what your argument is here. I want to know it. He knows I disagree. But tell me, why do you think such and such should be? And if you do it in that tone of voice, you can actually have a conversation with someone. Otherwise, you can't. You know, and I think it's very important that we learn to. Another thing, don't read, I said this before, don't read what the other person writes on Facebook or any social media. It'll just make you crazy. You know what I'm writing, right? Why do that? But I think the most important thing, well, the thing that's fundamental in what I learned myself in my own relationship and what I've learned from the people that have come to me to talk about this, is that you cannot change another person's mind politically, no matter how smart you are, how brilliant your conversation, how persuasive you think you are, because people do change their minds sometimes, but not because somebody else tries to force them to do it.
Right.
So what you have to accept in order to have a real political conversation, and this is the main point of my book, is that you're talking to somebody who's a different person from you. They have their own set of values. They have their own ideas. They have their own history. And you are not going to change them by showing them the error of your ways. You can ask them about what they think and feel. They may change out of their own ideas, but they're not going to change because you make them change. And once you accept that, you can talk.
Right.
I think it's exactly as easy to change somebody's politics as it is to make somebody fall in love with you who's not in love with you, which is right. Zero, right?
Right.
Did anybody ever make somebody else fall in love with them? I don't think so. I've tried a lot, but it never worked.
Yes.
So I make one of the main points in the book, actually, is to say that this is, because I've written about obsessive love and how people keep trying and trying to, you know, become what the other person wants and get them to see the light and all this. It's the same with politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same dynamic, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You have to say, this person doesn't love me, or this person is always going to be a Republican.
Right.
You know, they're similar. They're very, you know what I mean by that? I mean, that you can't change fundamentals of another person, and it's not your job to do it. And also, it's not your right to do it.
Right, exactly. And then I think it was
feel what to... I feel. I don't want somebody else to force me to feel differently.
Right. And I think it was great you mentioned asking them why, like why in this core belief that you believe. In other words, you're saying for the person who's asking the question to step into that person's worldview.
Yes, precisely. Precisely. You got it. You know, but you have to do it also. You know, there's a lot of ways to say, why do you believe this? You know,
right.
Say, tell me how you believe this. You could say, you believe this? Why do you believe this? You know, so how we say things matters a lot, right? But this is really the point. When you can get to the point with other people to say, I want to know where you come from and why you think this, then you can have a conversation. And you can learn a lot of things. And as I said, I spent a fair amount of time with right-wing people who were not my world, but I learned to talk to them.
Right.
You know, and I remember when the Kavanaugh hearings were going on, oh my God, that was a hard one, because I felt very, very strongly against that. And this one man who works for National Review said to me, because we've been knowing each other for years, he said, do you believe that people should be held responsible for what they do when they're 17? And I said, I really think it depends on what they do.
Right.
I didn't say, what do you mean? This guy's a jerk. Like, get him out. I don't want him. I just, that's how I said it. And that's all I said. That's all I said. So right. There are ways that you can make your point that are not offensive and obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to work out your own offensive, obnoxious self, which we all have, that wants to say, you voted for this creep? You're going to vote for this? No. You can't talk like that and expect anybody to listen to you. You know, that's just to let off steam. It's not going to work. And once you accept the only person that you can really influence in the whole world is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if you have a good therapist, they can influence you because you're asking them to influence you, right? I mean, we can influence people as therapists because they come for that reason.
Yeah, I was just thinking, even in the sense of another good tip is, therapy because we've learned how to ask questions.
Yes.
That are that do not put people in defense mode.
That's right.
That's what you're talking about, is how do you talk to your partner or have these discussions without putting that other person in defense mode?
That's absolutely right. And so what I believe is that what we have to do in these discussions of politics are the same that we have to do in any other difficult, complicated, emotional situation. It's not something really different.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't talk to somebody about other subjects, you're not going to be able to talk to them about politics.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
You know? And it's not something, I mean, people feel very strongly, but I don't think it's different from learning to communicate in general.
Right.
You know?
Right. And when to have a great communication, you have to feel safe, and the person you're communicating has to feel safe.
Yes, and you have to use self-control.
Right.
I think we underestimate how important self-control is. We have this idea that being honest and being forthright, you know, means we're authentic. And I agree. But the degree of that, the way we do that, when we do it, who we do it with, you know, those things count.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just speak your mind outright and think everybody's going to think you're great or immediately convert.
Right.
Also, you have to learn to pick your battles, and you have to learn not to say things in certain ways. And I have, for instance, I have a next door neighbor who's a devout Catholic.
Okay.
And passionate Catholic. And she happens to be a wonderful woman. And she has been so good to me over the years. Why should I have to talk about abortion with her?
Right.
She feels strongly about it. I mean, I wanted to kind of understand what she felt about it, you know, because I felt so differently. But I'm not going to change her mind. I want to appreciate her wonderful qualities. You know, the fact that when I had to go to the hospital every day for a year, she wanted to come with me.
Wow, amazing.
She did a lot of the times.
Right. So she passed like the cancer test.
She passed
the
chemotherapy test. Right.
Yeah. The chemotherapy. Yes. Wow. Right. Awesome.
And it's difficult to have friends you disagree with. It stretches you.
Yeah, I think it's more able to, when you have diverse friends, you expand your mind, you expand your worldview. It
Absolutely.
Makes you grow so much. So
politically, racially, we're all in little boxes. It drives me crazy. I want to know other people in the world. You know, I want to know because it expands what I know and it expands who I am to allow other people's points of view into my life. I mean, I don't have to agree with them, but I have to be respectful of them, and I have to really make an effort. I have to make an effort to feel why somebody feels these things. What is somebody looking for? Why would a person that I care about and I feel is a moral person vote for Trump? Right. And I want to know that.
Right.
It expands what I know.
Exactly.
But I have to believe that it's possible to be a moral and decent person and vote for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even though I would love him to be transported to Mars tomorrow.
Yeah. And sometimes when you ask those questions of why, you get to know more about the other person.
Yes.
You understand that and how they grew up. And like I said, my partner's from Belgium. So when he explained more of how socialism worked in his life, I understood more
about
where he's coming from. Yes.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, Dr. Schaefer, I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
You're most welcome. It was delightful to talk to you. And I hope our listeners are encouraged and have their worlds expanded a little bit by our conversation.
Yes, definitely. And if you guys want to find her out or search her out, you can find her on, you have a website, right?
And yes, gschaeferphd.com.
Yes.
There's all my contact information there.
Yes, and find her on Facebook, and she's also on Twitter and Instagram. And like I said, she's written tons of books, and she's always there to help out. And so thank you so much for being on the show. And this has been the Bringing Intimacy Back show, where intimacy is real. And thank you guys for listening. And if you're looking for more information about Bringing Intimacy Back, please check out our website or follow us on YouTube, Facebook, iTunes, or Spotify. Thank you.